November 10, 2021. It's the Watch for Pedro show.
When I talked to you a couple of years ago in Los Angeles and I asked you if you ever would consider adding another horn to your group, you said probably the thing you would do is, if you added anything, you could add drums. Was that, did you have in mind then these kinds of things that...
I don't even know, man, but I guess so. And that's just, I still feel so strongly about drums. I really do.
You said you were listening to African music and you noticed that if you played that with some of your music, that it still all sounded right, because anything you played over the drums...
Yeah, I feel very strongly about these drums, but it's just like I experimented in it, but we didn't have too much success. I believe it would have worked, but, you know, Elvin and McCoy, they couldn't hold it. It was time for them to go.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show. Happy Wednesday. Start off the show, John Coltrane talking to Frank Kosky, November 1966. A little spiel about drums there. And then Corey Fogel, John Wood, dual improvisation from 2021, recent. Speaking of drums. And maybe you could have heard there, I ain't man alone, because of those fucking Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention I got with me. Brother Corey Fogel, welcome aboard, Corey.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for having me.
You're in SoCal, right? What part?
I'm in Lincoln Heights, about a minute east of Chinatown.
I know Lincoln Heights, yeah, yeah. A little northeast of mayor's office.
Yeah.
Okay, and actually, you know, the first time that got turned on to you was Carla Boswich.
That's right. She was hooking us up for some questions I had about the origins of improvised music in Pedro.
Can you believe? You know, there's a movie, right, about it's a Gene Krupa story, and Steve Allen played him, and he meets Lionel Hampton, like, cooking in Pedro, and they go to, hey, join the band, and let's go to Avalon and Catalina and do some gigs. So Pedro's got some, I think Art Pepper's Ma was from here.
Nice.
I think it was
what's that movie called?
What's that?
What's that movie called?
Gene Krupa story.
Ah, cool, yeah.
But it ain't Gene Krupa, right? I think it's Steve Allen. I can't remember. But anyway, I'm curious about your journey through music, Corey. So please bring your earliest musical memory that you still got in your fucking head case.
Yeah, I mean, the music teacher shows up and he asks who wants to play a musical instrument during lunchtime. You know, I'm in the fifth grade and say, who wants to play the drums? Or I say, yeah, me. Or who wants to play the clarinet? I also said, me. But then I went with the drums, and, you know, it's funny because you grow up doing it in school and you only get to play, you know, symphonic music, concert band, the Christmas programs. And
Hawaii 5-0, Frankenstein.
Yeah, all that stuff. Or maybe if you're lucky, your high school band director will arrange like Birdland or something, right?
25 or 6-4.
Yeah. So
I remember that big time. Corey, can we go before that, though? I'm curious about when you were a wee lad. And, like, in the pad you grew up, was there any instruments?
No instruments, but I had the best possible parents for listening to music. You know, they were all into all the classic rock. My dad was super into Jethro Tull and Led Zeppelin and The Who. And
can I tell you about Pedro with the Tull Connect? The first baseman, right, Glenn Cordick? He married a Pedro lady and lived here for a number of years. Then he moved to Hawaii and he passed away a few years ago. But, yeah, we have a little bit of Tull and Pedro.
Nice.
Anyway, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
Might have been Madonna, True Blue, or Guns N' Roses, Appetite for Destruction.
And what about the first gig you saw?
First gig I saw, well, I was 3 years old and I was at the Talking Heads concert in Central Park.
Wow. So, okay, I might have that tour I might have saw at UCLA. Was it them doing like Take Me to the River?
I think it was Remain in Light tour with like the expanded band.
Yeah, it was a big band. It was a big, because the first I only saw them twice. One was that one, and out in the field. Yeah, there's them plus like 5, 6, 7 people on the stage. But the first time was the Whiskey.
Yeah.
And somebody told us PCP was strong mota, but it was not. It's Elephant Droga or some shit. And so I fell and got mud all over my face, and I went to the club and started screaming at the singer. And it was a thing. But your parents were good listeners, so they
had all the Talking Heads and the Devo and a lot of new wave going on when I was like 3, 4 years old, and then all the classic rock records, David Bowie and all that stuff.
Did you have older brothers or sisters?
Nope, I was the oldest and only musician.
Okay. Because a lot of my guests that are into experimental stuff, it seems they're the youngest. And they get turned on, but maybe that's because your folks were turning you on to this stuff. So going back to the school thing now, so you want to play every instrument the teacher wants to give it. The problem is the material.
Yeah. Material, you're stuck with this concert music. And as a drummer, it's just like a slow drip before you get to be a drummer. First they say, well, buy this rubber practice pad. And that's all you get for like months. And then maybe you get to play the bass drum and then maybe the snare drum. So it's such
a gradual. Did you ever get to do any triangle?
Oh, definitely. Paid my dues with the triangle, for sure.
What about marching band? Were you glockenspiel?
I was, like, pretty ambitious with, like, the quads. And
oh, yeah, they're bitching.
But I didn't have, like, super competitive marching band. I had this kind of, like, you know, Scottish style. All the drums were tuned really open. This is in, like, South Jersey, right outside of Philadelphia.
Also, with quads, you don't have to do traditional, right? You can still do match. Right. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, exactly.
But listeners, traditional, in the old-timey days, you'll notice that they hold the sticks different, depending on the hand, because the fucking drum was slung on a sling.
Totally.
Yeah. Contraption, it just changes everything. But some dudes still kept that way of playing. In fact, Bill Bateman, Blaster's drummer, he plays traditional, but he reverses the stick on one hand, so it's got no tip, a fat end, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's trippy about that stuff. I get into it big time. What about the thing, not after school, like graduating, but afternoon, the garage band, the basement band, the bedroom band?
Yeah, I had some friends. We were all into, you know, grunge music. This is like 1993, 92, 94. So we would get together, and it was just like one of these stories where it's like, we're always looking for a bass player. Did we find a bass player yet? I met him at the mall. I think he plays with, you know, he's got a Misfits shirt on. So
New Jersey.
Yeah.
Doyle. So, no, Jerry. Sorry. Sorry, Jerry.
Yeah.
Don't want to fuck up like that. E-A-E-I-A. You know, he played with four strings, but they were two of the same. So when one broke, yeah, you didn't have. How do you get the trap kit? Because you're playing this piecemeal thing at school and shit. So when do you get your first trap kit?
Like I'm 12 or 13 years old, and like, you know, I start to understand that like a drum set is a thing I can play. Like it's deep in the closet in the band room, and if I'm lucky, I get like, you know, sneak in after lunch and play it there. You know, as a, like a refuge from all the concert band and triangle and cymbal that I'm playing. So there's a drum set. I start playing it. Eventually, like the choir teacher asks me to play like on the jazz concert. So finally, I'm like, I got my first little like jazz drum set gig with like some Christmas songs in the seventh grade. And then my parents finally realized to buy me one in the eighth grade. So I'm about 12 years old and they buy me a drum
set. So you get your own. Okay. Well, thank God you get that first one to show people it wasn't just talk.
Yeah, totally.
Right? Look, you gave me this music here, a project called Spinnerette.S.
The Spinnerettes.
Oh, is that what it is? Is it dot or is it apostrophe?
That's a dot, Spinnerettes.
Okay, Spinnerettes. And this tune, Pistnerine, so I'm going to play it.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Watt from Pedro show. Some friends of mine, I found out, is in the Spinnerets, you know. And great cat, John Dietrich, incredible guitar man. I think he's living in New Mexico, Berkey.
Yeah,
and,
he is.
And then here, I think maybe Silver Lake, Echo Park area, is Vice Cooler.
Steve, you know, Steve, his brother Steve.
Oh, it's Steve. I'm sorry. You know, I remember Honey Tooth, right? They jump around in bun huggers.
Yeah. Honey Tooth is Vice's band, yeah.
The lady from Batmobile, right? Bratmobile.
Right.
My memory, all the connects. Then we had Sam Locke Ward out of Iowa City. It's a flop. And finally, Corey Fogle, Del Sol String Quartet.
Zygmunt. Yeah.
Zygmunt. Like the Polish spelling, I think. Well, in likeness to this stuff, Corey.
So trying to deal with improvised music in different ways and creating like different kinds of compositions for improvisers to play that I will improvise on top of and trying to write it down in, you know, a semi-formal way. And so this is, I'm finishing my PhD at UC Irvine in music. And it's a program with improvisers and composers and people that build their own synthesizers and computer programming, you know, wizards. So we had a string quartet visiting us, and every different kind of composition was thrown in front of them. So this is something I wrote, and I notate the rhythms, and I notate these melodic shapes, but I don't really use the music staff. So they're kind of interpreting, like, what pitches they want to use, what range of the instrument they want to use. And they have certain cues to, like, improvise, certain cues to transpose into any key they want to transpose in. But basically, yeah, the string quartet is sort of reading these rhythms and melodic shapes without all the information that a classical string quartet would prefer to read.
Corey, really interesting. So you're exploring different ways for musicians to connect why they're doing it.
Definitely.
I had a talk with my friend Peter this morning about, he is asking me, what is swing, Watt? And I said, swing is something that traditional way of writing music can't really convey, right?
Yeah.
Right? That thing, the strut, the swing, the shuffle, yeah. Right? Because it was written for, it was many hundreds of years ago and actually set up for opera and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came to rhythms, right, they were really, and you being a drummer, man, you'd be way short on that. So I was trying to tell him it's not out of time, but there's push and pull, like the ocean has tide as swell and come suck in and push out, you know, like Elvin Jones playing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you have this old paradigm that says this is the rule, this is the way we're going to, everything goes through this funnel, man, you start missing out on some opportunity, right? Okay, so I kind of jumped ahead because you're in upper education, so You graduate high school, but during high school, though, you're doing, what'd you call it, grunge?
Yeah, that was the main thing for me.
So Dave Grohl?
Dave Grohl, Matt Cameron.
Okay. You know Chamberlain, Matt Chamberlain?
Yeah.
He's Pedro.
Right, oh yeah, that's right.
He grew up with Jerry Trevithick, my second man drummer, same about a block away from each other.
Yeah.
So it's because the right age at the right time and all this thing and stuff like that. But did you go back? What about people like Mitch Mitchell or Elvin Jones?
Yeah, I love Mitch Mitchell, Ginger Baker.
Yeah, Ginger Baker.
Bonham. Love Keith Moon, absolutely.
Yeah, Keith Moon. John Bonham. You know what else? Do you remember a guy named Frosty? He played for Lee Michaels. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sounds
he familiar. He had this technique where, fuck the sticks. I'm playing the trap with my hands. And Bonham got into this shit. And the only time I saw Zeppelin, that's with solo. I think he had fish in the fucking toms. Yeah, Vista Light kind of trip like that.
Oh, yeah.
So did any of these bands do gigs?
Nope, not really. You know, it was like a different culture. It was like we were in a tiny suburb, and then I moved to Arizona to Phoenix for my senior year. And that's when suddenly, like, you really felt the West Coast in action, and you saw how people were just getting out. They had more agency, more freedom. So when I moved to Phoenix, Arizona, that's when I started playing gigs with bands in my high school there, my senior year of high school. And it was just a different vibe, different access.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Corey, do you remember your first gig?
First gig is like at a, you know, YMCA or something with, like, some bands that were... Yeah, they're like maybe a little Christian rock, not sure. But definitely like kind of grungy. And then, Yeah, some high school talent show stuff where we're trying to, like...
Was that first gig a success? Did they throw shit?
It was a success, you know? There was, like... And there was a culture of people already knowing to go out and see bands different than it was in New Jersey, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
Although there was some places... I remember, it was more north, like by Trenton, right? Was it called? City Gardens?
City Garden.
So there was some gig stuff early on and stuff, but you're right about maybe a little more out here, a little more open. Okay. And the material, were you guys doing originals or were you copying?
Originals. I think the band I was in was really influenced by the band The Live outside of, like, Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah, I remember those guys.
But then I had, like, you know, I had, like, my jazz band friends also, and we were already kind of interested in, like, John Zorn and...
What do you mean by jazz band friends?
These are friends that, like, we had in school, and, like, we were, like, all in the jazz band, or, like, well, can we do more interesting things than this, and ended up just being at, like, you know, the high school talent show and stuff, and just...
Oh, it's interesting. So these are the guys who really know how to play because they were being, well, not really, but they've learned a way to play because of education. But you guys didn't take advantage of that to make a band outside?
We didn't, no. But
I think that's one of the problems with institutionalized learning sometimes. Whereas maybe the bedroom band, the basement band, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Learning by doing. I'm not saying that's the only way. And I think one can inform each other. But it seems if you go... You know what I'm trying to say. The experience should be like a lot of layers.
Yeah, and if your parents aren't musicians, they're not going to encourage you to get out there on the stage and go do it. You know, maybe they'll say, "Oh, why don't you go busk at the supermarket or something?" But they're not encouraging you to, like, get out there and, like, play an actual gig because they don't know it.
Yeah, but you know what? Sometimes that might help, right? Like a farmer will tell you, if he wants a good crop, use a lot of manure.
Yeah,
so maybe
yeah.
Like brilliant motherfuckers. I don't know. Things work out the way they do. So yeah. How long are you with these grunge guys?
This is just like in high school. You know, my whole year of high school in Phoenix, Arizona, playing here, playing there, like some parties and things. And then
you graduate, and you don't get a higher education yet, though, for music, right?
Yeah. You know, my parents didn't go to college, so once again, they didn't really know how to encourage me to go to college. So I'm trying to make a triumphant return to the East Coast, and then I go to this jazz school called the University of the Arts, which is kind of like a baby Berklee School of Music in a way.
What town, Corey?
Yeah, so...
What town, Corey?
This is in Philly.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's when I move back there, and I start studying jazz. Also trying to, like, look for people that are interested in doing more. Wasn't really, like, playing, like, local gigs or anything. I was just, like, you know, in school and...
Well, how would you rate the experience of the school? Was it good?
It was okay. I mean, it was, like, really straight-laced, and then I got a lot more into, like, electronic music and trying to find the ways to be as creative as possible. And a lot of people, you know, a high school jazz band and a high school jazz band director were doing these reductions of... you know, popular, like, Maynard Ferguson and, you know, Woody Herman tunes, maybe, like, a Coltrane tune. But then I get to this, you know, jazz school, and a lot of the people that are there, they already know what it's like to play in a quartet, to, like, comp, and to, like, really speak the language. And I just kind of knew how to play the drums, and I could play some different styles. But I didn't really know what it meant to be in, like, a small jazz combo until I got there. So that was really, like, eye-opening for me. I immediately kind of realized it wasn't, like, totally, like, my music. And the most creative I found I could be was in, like, the electronic music studios that were available. So then I started looking for other stuff, other schools. I kind of wanted to transfer. I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted. I wanted to go to Oberlin College. They had this, like, amazing...
Ohio! Electronic...
Yeah, yeah.
Greg Sarnier, great drummer man, went to school there. And I just had some other cat on the show just a few episodes ago. I got to play there too. That interesting place, really interesting place. Corey, we're at the end of the first hour of the November 10, 2021 edition of Wap Peter Show. Special guest Corey Fogle. Hold tight for hour two. November 10, 2021, second hour of Wap for Peter Show.
چشمه های شاد من خوش گیدن بکوشند و کوشه به دشمن دهند بگیتی کسی را نماند وفا بگیتی کسی را نماند وفا زبان و روان شود پر جفا بریزند خون از پی خواسته بریزند خون از پی خواسته شود روزگار بد آراسته زیان کسان از پی سود خیش زیان کسان از پی سود خیش به جویند و دین اندر آرد پیش زیان کسان از پی سود خیش به جویند و
Black for Pedro show starts second hour off with COVID denality. And that's Corey Fogle, Ryan Breen, and Davin Givon. And a kind of a little pun rock there, okay, from Living Colors, the original there. And topically appropriate, right?
Yeah.
And then SLWCC Watt, the collab I got with Sam Lockward in Iowa City, Asai. And finally, Sebarg Ensemble.
Yeah, that's some Persian music. Those are some people I play with down in Irvine.
Okay, in a tune called Shahnameh.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, near where you go to school?
Yep. We met in school, and they were starting this ensemble out of San Diego. So, I've been their drummer for a couple of years.
Man, that's a trip. When I went to college in the late 70s, and, like, right, you couldn't tell people you were punk, you know, some people knew and called you asshole and shit like that. But the only guys to be friends with me on the campus was Iranian. And then at that time, Savak, right, the Shah had secret police following him and shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we're talking 40 years ago. But it shows to go you, right? Let's continue with your journey. Like, you're looking for different schools after that that first one in Philly. And you're going more towards electronic experimental?
Yeah, so I went to this summer program at Oberlin College, and it was just all these Buchla synthesizers, and they're teaching music software, Maximus P, and there's like the Surge, and I'm just blown away by all these, you know, new kinds of, methodologies. And I wanted to go there. Didn't really work out. I don't know if I was like academically up to snuff to get into Oberlin, but that's when I just kind of resigned myself to going to Arizona State University, back where my parents lived. And, you know, I was in the jazz program there, and I had to study classical percussion there. They also had electronic music, which was cool. So it was a little bit of everything. And I was really happy that I was forced to study classical percussion the entire time I was there. Even if
I ask you, that makes me think of something. The symphony in Cincinnati had a very young percussionist named Art Tripp.
Yeah.
Who went on to play with who? Cam Beefheart, right? And Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
So music is music, right? So when you learn that stuff, you were just increasing your vocabulary.
Absolutely. I mean, it was so influential that I had to study classical percussion while I was a jazz major, and it was great.
And on the side, were you still rock and roll?
Yeah, but it took me a while to come out of my shell, honestly. I was listening to a ton of electronic music, noise music, experimental jazz, and I don't know, it takes you a while to just, like, break out and do what you're hearing in your head. So I'm just, like, swinging along, ding-da-ding, ding-da-ding, playing a lot of bebop, playing percussion ensemble, and really institutionalized in a way that, like, maybe I would have told my younger self to, you know, break out as soon as you can. But I started playing jazz gigs around Phoenix all the time. But it took me a while to sort of, like, play what I was hearing in my head, honestly, until I moved to L.A. in 2002.
Okay, rock and roll, bass guitar, rock and roll, kick drum, jazz, kick drum, so much different.
Totally.
Jazz, bass, right, right? They're using the kick for bombs.
Right.
Right? And Earl Palmer, right? I read with Little Richard, they couldn't carry a bass guy, so he comes up with this steady kick drum thing. No longer bombs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? And that's so much like beating on the ride or the hi-hat to keep the fucking time. And the bass guy don't have to just do eighth notes, because electric bass. But as a player, as a young man and learning about music, did you trip on this? The way things act different in the different whatever styles?
I mean, I just kind of knew that I wanted things to sound differently, and I knew that I didn't try to sound like a rock drummer. And I think I notoriously sound too much like my own self when someone's asking me to play like a rock gig. Like, hey, you play a rock gig? Like, yeah. And then I bring like the open bass drum or like the really dead kind of thud, sort of thundery bass drum. And so, yeah, I'm thinking
about
all this
stuff. You know where you can really tell it's a jazz guy with his trap set? He has tuned the toms up so fucking high.
Yeah, and
Max
that was
Max Roach, right? Max Roach, yeah, oh my God. I mean, I love it, though. I ain't against it.
Yeah, but I knew that wasn't totally my style either. So, yeah, I was just trying to find my voice playing jazz gigs and trying to make them as creative as possible. And, you know, you're learning about how you're supposed to, you know, lock in with the bassist and whether the bassist is the bottom of the band or is the drummer in the bottom of the band. So
well, for sure the kick drum and the bass do a little dance, I think. And that these bands without bass guitars, okay, there's more room in the van, but I'm sorry, that poor lonely kick drum.
Totally.
Yeah, okay. I got a fucking ally there. Okay. Well, here, you gave me this music, Weaponry, from Object as Subject.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Wow, dude. That's some desert shit right there.
Watch for Pedro show that chunk of music. Weaponry, object to subject. Enlighten us, Corey.
Yeah, so that is a queer punk band that was started a few years ago by a friend named Paris Hurley. She is a wizard on the violin and took a shift, wanted to do more vocals and more kind of ritualistic kind of performance, punk rock. And, you know, we were in a band together. She was playing bass. I was playing drums for a different rock band. She asked me to do this session. And I was so happy to do this. It was like one of the best records I've ever made. I could play as heavy as I wanted to. And it was just like all this stuff from my entire life of music came out into this really, really hard shit in the recording studio. Really heavy, really fun to play. Yeah, one of my favorite records I've made.
Victoria Shen after that with Live at Sea Manhole, number 2, April 21, 2017. Corey Fogle, Devin Hoff, Tony Malaby. Devin was just on a few episodes ago. Untitled Trio Improvisation 2016. Incredible a bass man. And he's just done a thing with a lot of Arco with some Irish-English folk singer lady. He reimagined her voice on the Arco bass.
Right. I was at that performance about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, that's right. He's out here playing. Yeah. Yeah, now something like that, you know, like this untitled trio improvisation. You're not worrying how you're going to lock in with Devin because you guys are going to be able to make an interesting conversation out of this, right?
Yeah, and we had just been on the road playing together with a singer, Julia Holter, for like 3 or 4 years straight. So then we just kind of have all of that going into this improvisation. And so it's a lockup of a different kind, I guess. You know?
I don't know Tony.
Oh, he is someone that also grew up in Arizona State. He was a little older than most of my cohort. Inspiration and mentor to many of the people that I went to college with when I was studying jazz. Yeah. And, yeah, so we just threw that down at his house in Jersey City about 5 years ago and came out really amazingly.
Bet you. Yeah, I think Devin's, he's living out there somewhere.
He's in Jersey City.
Jersey City, where WFMU is.
Yeah, right.
Right, and that statue of the guy getting the bayonet in the back, Katyn. God, that's a graphic piece of work there. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. November 10, 2021, edition Watt Pedro Show, special guest Corey Fogle. Hold time for hour three. November 10, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Well, for Peter's show, it's our third hour off of Julie Halter. We were just talking about it. Chiatus. And then Bumas Prendon, Gimme Pop, Pop, Mantra Tantra from D.C. area. And then Night Jewel with When There Is No Sun. And off air, people, we were having a little fun with this idea of what's pop and what ain't. And so these are a little different than the other kind of music we've been playing from Corey. You want to talk about it, Corey?
Yeah, well, Julia and I both went to Cal Arts for our graduate degrees. And, you know, when you graduate from Cal Arts, even if you're not there at the same time, you kind of end up being friends and in community together.
Sure.
So, yeah, we were just kind of in an experimental music community. And turns out she was kind of getting some more recognition and notoriety for her songs and was going to start touring and was putting a band together. So I've been playing with her for about 10 years now. And it's been, yeah, really awesome, really amazing.
And Night Jewel?
Night Jewel is a close friend of Julia's. I met her through Julia, and she made this record, newest record, just came out about a month ago. And we made it about 2 years ago. And one of the first records where someone didn't really do a whole lot of editing, so she really trusted me to lay down these beats over mostly, you know, synthesizer, drum machine backgrounds, and to play live over them. So that was really a great experience.
You being a drummer, man, is beautiful. I love what you do for both of them. You're very generous, very generous. Let me ask you this. Just putting it out there. Tell me if it's full of shit. Especially being a drummer has to do little loops and stuff. But improvisation's big enemy is repetition.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
No, I would not agree, actually.
Okay, okay.
Good.
I'm glad you don't.
Yeah.
That is just too simplistic, right?
Yeah, I've improvised very minimal things. It's just kind of incessant, recursive, just monotonous.
But little things are changing slowly, like a brick wall, one brick at a time is changing.
Yeah, I definitely refer to
Mr. Glass's Einstein on the Beach, right? There's small changes going on.
Totally. Love that. I love writing music like that with those kinds of changes.
But you can also improvise that way, right?
Say that again?
You can also improvise that because, remember, that was my
theory. Yeah.
The enemy. It's not the enemy. It could be a co-conspirator.
Absolutely. And I love those micro variations that come from exploring the same sound over and over, the same riff, the same gesture in your body. And, yeah, seeing how each little repetition is minutely different is really a beautiful thing to me.
And like you were talking about in the first hour, something about sounded to me like trying to dance on a rug that's itself moving around. And mm-hmm. Because this seems like a dilemma to me, but maybe I'm wrong. When it comes to improvisation, like who goes first?
Yeah. You got to jump into it, and you just kind of take whatever you're being given, whether that's someone else's sound, or even if you drop a stick and you have to work with that, you know, it's all about just making something out of whatever you're being given.
Work in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one time I was doing a recording thing with Nels, he had 36 pedals. I said, what's your favorite one? He said, the volume pedal.
Yeah, yeah.
and I said, why? Because you got to listen.
Totally.
So you agree that's a big component.
Definitely.
So even though you said somebody's got to stick it out there, pull down their pants, whatever the fuck, it can't be totally like that, right? Because it's got to be a conversation. So somebody, you put it out there and you kind of wait to see what the reaction is?
Yeah, reaction, and you just take that as, like, the phrase. You take that as the dialogue and say, okay, this is what we're working with. We left some space, you left some space, so now we're dealing with this cycle of space or this cycle of non-space.
I like this idea because in the bass, probably with the drums too, we got this thing called work in the holes. You got to almost see in the future. You got to put places people can go.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to play this other improv you did with the brother we lost, John Russell.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show. Last music for this edition, entitled Trio Proposition, 2019, Corey Fogle, John Butcher, John Russell. Then we got Head Boggle from his new album, Spy Show. And finally, Solo Improvisation, one of my big drummer heroes. Actually, not Hollywood punk, although he got big in that scene. He's actually from Phoenix, Mr. Don Bowles. And he's working his club Ding-a-ling in 2016.
Yeah, very thankful every time Don gives me the opportunity to play. And this is one of my favorite solos I've ever done. Happened there.
He's an incredible guy. I mean, he plays everything, right? And he lives in a practice pad, I think, in Huntington Park.
Yeah.
He's a great grandfather.
That's what I was just going to say.
He's a few months older than I am, but the guy's, I mean, his waist must be like 12 inches.
I know,
Remember Georgie would like describe his ass. He just puts his two fists together. There's Don Bowles' ass. There's But he's a great cat, and I always thought he was this little boy, you know, when he first joined the Germs. But, man, he's so good on that GI record.
Oh.
Oh, man, something else. And he was part of this little posse, the Consumers. I don't know if you knew these guys because they were it was a little down the road from you. But they turned into Human Hands and, 45 Grave and stuff like this. I think Paul Cutler went on to Dream Syndicate, and it was an important little faction that moved over. And then the Meat Puppets came in through the Monitor people. They had friends in the Valley and Monitor. And tell me about this, though, the first thing we played in this chunk of music, this improv with the two Johns.
Right. Well, going over to London with, like, a punk band called the Meishi, and, many years ago, a friend of mine told me to look up John Russell, and he was just the nicest, most welcoming person. You know, you're trying to get gigs in cities you've never heard of, and when people have never heard of you, you're new there.
Right.
And they're like, hey, can I play? I'm from somewhere far away. You don't know who I am at all.
Right.
And Russell was like, yes, come play. I'll play a duo with you. Come to my house. We'll drink. And every time I've been to London, like over, 15 years between 2005 and, last time we did this, 2019, he was just like the nicest person to me. And I got to meet so many other improvisers through him. He put me on a show playing solo with John Russell playing solo. So we met. So finally I had a night at Cafe Odo and the booker just said, hey, well, do you want to play with the two Johns? They're both willing to play with you. I said, fuck yes, please. And,
What better gift can one musician do for another than something like that? That's bitching. I love to hear that, Corey. I love it. What do you got going now?
Right now, so finishing up my PhD, I just premiered a new group at the Angel City Jazz Festival a few nights before you played.
We shared the, same stage, but same event.
Yeah, so I played second night with a new group with a trombonist who I've known and played with a long time. Maddie Barbier, great friend and saxophonist who lives in San Francisco, named Beth Schenk. We've been friends for 25 years, went to college together, and a wonderful friend named Judith Berkson, pianist, who just moved here to do her doctorate at CalArts. And so we had a new quartet of my semi-improvised music. We did that a month ago, recorded an album, so hopefully it's
semi-improvised. So what, like you allow spaces inside a composition?
I'll make a roadmap and I'll just give these prompts using like visual language or actual notes sort of obscured or modified from traditional notation. And I'll say, here's how we get from point A to point B to point C. And it'll end up being like an hour long kind of odyssey.
That's bitching. That is beautiful. I love to hear it. Look, when you get new stuff, you're invited on anytime you want. You come aboard. Will you please, Corey?
Awesome, yes.
And is there a place for you on the internet that people can go to?
Yeah, coreyfogle.com.
Okay, people, CoreyFogle.com.
Yeah.
Okay, keep on keeping on, brother. It's been November 10, 2021. Dishwap Peter shall keep your powder dry.